versus Kidder.
Your Honors, good morning. My name is Haley Siebens. I'm a deputy prosecutor in Skagit County with Skagit County Prosecutor's Office. I ask that I be allowed to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal. This is a case on appeal from a dismissal order stemming from competency proceedings regarding Ms. Darla Kidder. Charges were filed in July of 2014 accusing Ms. Kidder of 2 counts of arson in the first degree. The allegations were that Ms. Kidder started fires in her apartment complex in the middle of the night. In August of 2014, her competency was called into question, and in September, competency restoration was ordered. There was an order of transport in December, early December 2014. A PR motion was denied mid-December, and on December 30th, 2014, defense brought a motion to dismiss alleging 8.3 governmental misconduct as well as speedy trial violations and a substantive due process argument alleging the failure to transport Ms. Kidder to Western at the time.
All right. What is your argument? Your argument in the briefing is twofold. Number one, that the court did not comply with the statutory requirements. That seems to be premised on your reliance on subsection B. Appellant is relying on subsection C of the statute. And your second argument is, well, that's Western State and we're the state, and so you should treat us separately. We also asked you to address a number of cases today. Mm-hmm. And so in the context of telling us what your argument is, you need to address the cases we've asked you to.
Certainly, Your Honor. Regarding the differentiation between the state and Western Hospital, I think that's an easy area to address, and I address that only for the purpose of kind of commenting on respondents' brief in that Western State Hospital and the County Prosecutor's Office cannot be held to the same standard in terms of a misconduct motion for purposes of 8.3. The court didn't make any findings on that area, and I don't think it's an issue that we need to spend much time with today, because I do believe Your Honor's correct in pointing out that some of the recent cases, including the True Blood case, including regarding the mandatory procedures and the time for transport, are instructive here. The thing that I wanted to specifically
point
out...
Well, how are they instructive as to your argument? So what is your argument? You're appealing. What's your argument?
Your Honor, my argument is that the court failed to follow the necessary and required procedures in 1077 by not holding an evidentiary hearing at the time of dismissal. If Your Honor reads Judge Meyer's findings, they are...
And what statutory provision are you relying on for your argument that the court erred in refusing to hold an evidentiary hearing?
Both 1077-068 and 1077-084.
And what subsection of 084? Is that B?
It would be B, Your Honor, yes, in terms of the requirement that if restoration is not accomplished in the necessary
time. How do you address subsection C of 084?
I think, Your Honor, if we're looking at section C looks at the mandatory time frames.
Yes. Isn't that what we have here?
We do. However, there are allowable procedures within the statute that provide justification for going outside that time frame. I think with True Blood, particularly the Ninth Circuit case that just came out, it even reiterates in 068 that the target time frames have goal time frames with subsections that allow for departure from those guidelines. Specifically, True Blood...
Who has the right to have the accused person evaluated? There's a statute that says it's supposed to happen. Whose right is that?
I think both parties are bound by ensuring that the defendant is competent for trial, Your Honor. I know...
Well, whose right is it to have the person evaluated? That's my question.
I think it would be the defendant's right to be evaluated.
Okay, well, he's not complaining. So what standing do you have to complain about some right he didn't get? He's happy.
Well, Your Honor...
Didn't happen, Wouldn't have been anything revealed at an evidentiary hearing, dismissed without prejudice. He's happy with that.
And the problem
why is do you have standing
the state
to
certainly has a due process and a right to
try. Stop right there. Now, you just told me, I believe, that the state of Washington has a due process right?
Let me correct myself, Your Honor. In looking at the case law, both Hendrick and Wicklin, it's clear that the 1077 procedures are the mandatory procedures to ensure the due process rights.
Not yours.
Correct, Your Honor.
Yeah, right. We can agree that the Civil War wasn't fought to give the states due process rights, right? Okay, because that's not clear from your briefing. So now we're just down to who has the statutory rights. And you've told me that the statutory right is enjoyed by the defendant, which makes sense. Mm-hmm. That's the person who's not to be put to trial unless they're competent. So why are you here?
Your Honor, the state has an interest in ensuring.
Well, then you should have done that. What steps did you take to make sure that this person was evaluated? There's nothing in the briefing that talks about the many letters that you sent to Western State or the phone calls from the elected prosecutor to demand that your rights to bring this person to trial were vindicated by the people at Western State. You did nothing, right?
I don't necessarily agree, Your Honor. Our prosecutor's office was in communication with Western. We had Western present before the court through their counsel to answer for the contempt.
It was always the defendant trying to push this forward. You didn't do a thing to push it forward.
You can either go
in
here.
See you in 10 minutes.
Rebuttal time. Okay. We'll see you in 10 minutes.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Kevin March here on behalf of Darla Kidder. Ms. Kidder spent almost 4 months without mental health treatment in Skagit County Jail awaiting competency restoration services. Civil commitment for the purposes of providing mental health treatment is only permissible under the Constitution so long as that treatment is actually provided. The formula is simple. No treatment, no commitment.
So the court's order, as I understand it, the state's relying on 1077-068 and 1077-084, subsection B. It appears as though the court was looking at subsection C. That seems to be what you're arguing. Can you address the statutory basis upon which the court made that order?
Yes. Under 084, section C, 1C, if at any time during these
I know what it says. So your position is the court was using subsection C?
Well, my position is that that's part of what the court was relying on, but the court also had the benefit of having the True Blood motion for a summary judgment ruling in front of it.
That would be the Western District decision.
That's correct. And defense counsel's arguments that substantive due process and procedural due process were being violated.
So how do you reconcile subsection B with subsection C?
I believe subsection B says if at the end of any mental health treatment and restoration period, if any, that suggests that there's not necessarily a mental health restoration period. Here, there was a period of 90 days that was ordered. Two-thirds of the way through that, defense brought a motion for immediate transport. So let me back up and say that even if the statute doesn't provide the basis for the trial court's order, the trial court still has a duty to vindicate Ms. Kidder's rights to have substantive due process.
Well, are you taking the position the court didn't have the authority under subsection C?
Not at all.
Then why are you arguing that?
Well, I'm arguing both. So under subsection C, at any time during the proceeding, the court has the authority to dismiss the case without prejudice and order evaluation for civil commitment.
And isn't that what the court did?
Yes, it did, after several attempts to get Western State Hospital to comply with its orders. The court first ordered her immediate transport in in November of 2014, that was ignored. Then it ordered the Western State Hospital to come in and show cause for why the transport hadn't occurred and held Western State in contempt. That was ignored. Then the court imposed monetary sanctions against Western State Hospital. That was ignored. Then the court entertained the defense motions for release on personal recognizance and dismissal. And after all of that, it felt that the statute wasn't being complied with and therefore entered an order of dismissal, as subsection 1C allows the court to do at any time during the proceedings.
When does the 90 days start to run?
That's not clear from the former statutes that I'm relying on. Now the statutes have been amended.
Well, but now doesn't make any difference for then. So what's your position?
Our position is that our first position is that the 90-day period, because it says in any event, includes the entire period of time that the court's permitted to order the defendant into restorative treatment, that it's 90 days in any event. So the clock starts to run immediately upon the ordering of competency restoration.
Well, wouldn't we also look at the court's order? I mean, doesn't the court's order say you're committed? It doesn't have any ambiguity.
It says you're committed, you're to undergo competency restoration. Our position is that that triggers the 90-day period. And then
But your position is the statute's ambiguous.
Well,
but as I read the order, it's not. So what is your position?
Well, our position is that the statute, the plain language, the fact that it says 90 days in any event suggests that the legislature intended the 90 days to begin running, as Your Honor indicates, from the date the court orders competency restoration. But if to address the state's argument, we haven't made an argument that the statute's ambiguous, but if the statute does allow for a reasonable time for transport, as the state seems to be arguing, then that reasonable, there's nothing in the statute that indicates what that reasonable period is, and in any event, 104 days is not a reasonable period of time.
Why do we care whether or not the statutory scheme was complied with? If there's a provision that says, if at any time during the proceeding the court finds, following notice and hearing, a defendant is not likely to regain competency, the proceeding shall be dismissed without prejudice. If this was during the proceeding, and if there was notice and hearing, and if the court found that competency was not likely to be regained, the basis for the court's findings is that the defendant wasn't being evaluated and the defendant wasn't being treated. The basis for the court's finding isn't really factually that the statute wasn't being complied with. It was that these other things weren't happening.
That's correct.
So why do we care about
the
statute? I mean, it's just isn't it just a sufficiency of the evidence thing? Were there evidence to support what Judge Meyer did?
Yes, and Judge Meyer looked at this case and made the determination whether the competency was likely to be restored and determined based on what had happened in the case that it was not. So, yes, we agree.
So we're sitting here with a sufficiency of the evidence argument on an order that dismissed an action without prejudice.
Here's so. So also, regardless of the statute, we believe that substantive due process, as described in the Mink case, which was relied on in the True Blood litigation, requires a person who is ordered to undergo involuntary civil commitment for competency restoration to actually receive that within a timely period. Under the True Blood litigation, under the permanent injunction that's been ordered, the court has indicated that the constitutional maximum number of days after competency has been ordered is 7. There are 7 days before restoration may begin. That wasn't challenged by the state to the Ninth Circuit. That remains the holding of the Trueblood litigation. So also, we believe that there was statutory authority, and then even if there wasn't statutory authority, and the state's position is correct that the statute allows Ms. Kidder to be held indefinitely before undergoing restoration treatment, that then the statute fails to provide an adequate level of procedural and substantive due process. That was the holding of Mink. That's been the holding of Trueblood and several other federal cases, including Youngberg v. Romeo, Bell v. Wolfish, Jackson v. Indiana. The general principle is that the nature of confinement must relate to its purpose. Ms. Kidder was determined to be incompetent, yet she was warehoused in Skagit County Jail for almost 4 months without any mental health treatment whatsoever. She decompensated during that time. It's well documented in the record by defense counsel. So we would ask that this court affirm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honors, if I could just make 2 points on rebuttal. One is regarding the finality of Judge Meyer's order in terms of why the state has an interest in having Your Honors decide this issue and decide the issue on the mandatory procedures in 1077. The state's issue in moving forward, regardless of the fact that it's a dismissal without prejudice, is the conclusiveness with which Judge Meyer wrote the dismissal order. The state still has an ethical obligation to bring charges that we are confident can be tried, and with the conclusions made by Judge Meyer based on a hearing that didn't have expert testimony, that didn't have any substantive factual matters related to his dismissal order, I think that is one of the real problems here. Even if the court looks at 1077.084 subsection C, I think the court has to find that that requires a meaningful hearing to occur, and we didn't have that situation. Ms. Kidder was at Western State Hospital at the time that the case was dismissed. Judge Meyer made findings as to her likelihood of restoration that were made without expert opinion at that time.
Isn't she in a catch-22, though? You're saying for this hearing to be meaningful, she's got to come forward with evidence about her situation. Where does that evidence come from? They haven't evaluated her. She hasn't been treated.
Right, and I think we do have to read sections B and C kind of in conjunction here, Your Honor. We're looking at subsection B that requires a hearing to occur after a period of restoration.
Well, she didn't have that.
Right, however, that's
a condition precedent, and it didn't happen.
I think when we're looking at subsection C, however, Your Honor, there's still the necessity that be a meaningful hearing.
It was meaningful. She was down at Western State. They said, we're not going to do anything with her, even though she's here now because the time's expired. Judge Meyer knew, wasn't going to get any facts from down there. Already found her not to be competent. Had all the facts that he needed with regard to whether or not that had changed. That's a meaningful hearing. If you wanted it to be more meaningful, you should have taken steps so that you would have been able to put on more evidence, like the results of her evaluation. But if you want to sit on your rights, then sometimes you lose them. So I don't think we should read 1B and 1C in order to put less of a burden on the government to make this work. I think we should construe the things in order to put more burden on the government, that if you don't take steps to see that other people in state government do the things that they're supposed to do, you might lose your right to try somebody, at least for a period of time, because this is a dismissal without prejudice.
Certainly.
That seems to me to be something the legislature might have had in mind and how to make this work. Putting the entire burden on public defenders and private counsel for accused people, that's not a way to construe this that's going to make it work better.
I think, Your Honor, if I don't disagree with Your Honor. I think when we're looking at some of those explanations in the current legislation that provide reasons for going outside the, particularly the time for transport. Trueblood specifically pointed to two, I think, out of several subsections and failed to hit on the subsection that was most appropriate here, which was the increased burden on Western State Hospital and the increased need for forensic evaluation services. And I think the record does support a finding that there was reason to be outside of that time frame. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. The next case is Stavers Chambers.